Hey, this is Kevin Sorbo here, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. And really, do some thinking, seriously.
We're on the road, we're going home, to the place where wild nerds roam, with pretty girls and dudes and kids, going to cons is our.
Hey man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
Hey everybody, and welcome to the Long Box, guys. My name is Tom Strange, and I'm not at all angry today, and I'm talking to some of my best friends. Joshua, I don't want to ask, but how you doing and how you feeling?
I'm still trying to migrate a stone through my lower GI. And I'm hoping to look like that rhino from the from Tundra from the Reptiloids soon, and just finish this cycle right off. I gotta say, the only thing that's really bothering my wife about it is every time I go to the bathroom, I sing Silver and Gold.
Tundra would always fire three at once. You don't want to do that with a kidney stone, my friend.
Maybe I don't want to do the Tundra.
What are you drinking there?
Diet Coke.
Ha. LT, how you doing and what you drinking?
I am doing much better than Josh. I'm just a little sniffly, so I am drinking probably one of the worst whiskeys ever, Trader Joe's brand whiskey, because it soothes a sore throat.
Trader Joe's, when you got nothing but things to trade for whiskey. How come you can't just go down to Trader Joe's and actually like trade stuff? Like, I got like five CDs. Can I get some beer? No, they don't like that.
Because nobody wants CDs.
That's a good point. Mike, how are you doing and what you drinking?
I am doing excellent, and I am not drinking anything tonight. I am trying to remain sober and somber.
As behooves the seriousness of our very serious topic tonight, sidekicks! Yes, sidekicks, those lovable madcap scamps that would often accompany our heroes on their madcap adventures. Mike, why don't you give us a little history on these lovable do-gooders?
Well, I think we should refer to John Ostrander, friend of the podcast and legendary comic book writer, for his opinions. This just comes out of his blog on comicsmix.com. I'm going to cut it down a little bit, but you can read the whole thing there if you go to it. A sidekick at base is a supporting character, and a supporting character's main function is to bring out aspects of the protagonist. In most cases, the sidekick is there so the protagonist isn't constantly monologuing. Robin falls into a strange category of a child or teen sidekick. He was originally introduced to lighten up the Dark Knight detective, and again, to give Batman someone to talk to rather than himself. Robin humanized the Bat. His popularity gave rise to a whole slew of children/teen associates. Moral and ethical questions have been raised about the whole idea of an adult hero having child/teen sidekicks. The lifestyle, after all, is inherently violent and dangerous. For me, I've sometimes identified more with the sidekick than the protagonist. Batman is difficult to like, but Dick Grayson is someone whom I can more easily relate. I think sidekicks are designed that way. They put more human into superhuman.
Josh, why don't you start us off? Who's one of your favorite sidekicks?
So, like Mike was saying, sometimes you just need somebody who level sets a character, and while they might not be action-based, I'm going to go with Foggy Nelson. Foggy's sort of the counterpoint to Daredevil, and he's never really wanted the same things as Daredevil as far as the aspects of the law are concerned. He was introduced the same moment Daredevil was in Daredevil number one in 1964. He's Daredevil's roommate in college, and they decide to strike out into the world together to make the world a better place, practicing law together. Little does Foggy know initially that his blind associate is taking his evenings off and wreaking or taking justice where they cannot apply it during the day in the courtroom. And Foggy has all sorts of ups and downs through the books, with romantic rivalries and professional rivalries, but he's always sort of a consistent return for Murdoch to come back to and realize that the law is still probably still has a bigger effect on what Daredevil's trying to do than almost anything else. So even though he is a nighttime crusader, he is brought back to the fact that the legal egress with Foggy often provides better results than he could ever do by himself. And I think that's just the humanity he brings to Daredevil.
Yeah, I have to add, he was one of my honorable mentions because of all the sidekicks out there, I believe he is Daredevil's moral compass.
Yeah, absolutely. He always brings him back into line, even when, you know, Daredevil, you know, starts to go really, really off base. I remember when it was Daredevil and Spider-Man were hunting down, who was the serial killer in the green mask? Do you remember? Sin Eater. And Daredevil starts off with the same idea that he's going to break his moral code because the Sin Eater is so bad. But then when he sees Spider-Man savaging Sin Eater, Daredevil actually basically hears the echo of Foggy's reason and tries to prevent Spider-Man from killing him so Daredevil can bring him to justice through the court system. And I think that's the storyline that always brings me back to how powerful a voice Foggy is in Daredevil's head.
Yeah, that's a great character. He's terrific in the comic books and great in the TV show, too. I really liked seeing him. Although every time I see the character, I can't help but think Mighty Ducks, like with just his head's bigger. Like every time I see that character on TV, like it's the Mighty Ducks kid, except it's like they took a bicycle pump and just made his head like five times bigger. That's all they did. Tommy, what about one of your favorite ones?
Well, since my job is kind of to go way back on this podcast, I'm going to go way back and say Ebony White, the Spirit sidekick, one of the first African-Americans portrayed positively in comics. Also, in Will Eisner's The Spirit, done by Matt Wagner and Dan Schick and Brendan Wagner back in 2015, him and also... Denny the Spirit's other sidekick, Sammy, they spend like the first 3-4 episodes trying to track down why the Spirit went away, who caused the disappearance of the Spirit, and what happened to him. So they kind of took over the investigation of trying to figure out what happened to the Spirit in that, and I think it's just a great example of the supporting characters trying to do good even without the protagonist there.
An excellent point.
Although I may say he started off as a horrible stereotype. He had to get redeemed by Will Eisner. Will Eisner eventually realized how he was depicting Ebony White and changed it as he was writing. So he went through a transition. But at first he was drawn horribly. He had the Piccaninny voice. But I agree with you. Eventually he became a good sidekick.
He did go through kind of the hero's journey on his own, yeah, as Will Eisner kind of evolved the character. But once again, at least somebody was bringing, the African-American perspective into the comics and portraying them in a positive respect.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up, Mike. I was actually about to say that myself. It's, you know, the worst part of the journey on the spectrum of being recognized in popular culture is invisibility. So before that, there were very few African Americans portrayed in any way in comic books. Having a sidekick, even with a terrible accent, even with the incredibly stereotypical big lips and big nose, at least he was drawn as a character that the Spirit could rely on and who was always trying to do good. So through the lens of, you know, modernity, it's seen as a terrible character. But when you take a look at the times, it was a step forward. And speaking of a step forward, one of my favorite characters is one of the few characters that I believe is where the sidekick overshadows the hero in a lot of ways, and that would be Kato, the sidekick of the Green Hornet. I believe that Kato is probably a little bit more universally well-liked and more well-respected in the superhero universe than the Green Hornet ever was. Kato started off in the 1930s as a sidekick. He's been a couple of different kinds of sidekicks. The radio show had him as being Korean, He's also been Filipino, and he's been Japanese. And, of course, in the TV show, he was Chinese. So I guess any old Asian will do when it comes to Kato in the early times. But now Kato is pretty much thought of as being the classical Bruce Lee Chinese-American Kato. Not only an excellent martial artist and an all-around good sidekick, he made the Green Hornet better in a lot of ways. He kind of had the Green Hornet taking some of the punches while he did all the damage around him, making the Green Hornet look like a better superhero than he was. Even in some of the old comic books and in the old radio series, Brett relied heavily on the fighting prowess of Kato to save him and to get him out of trouble. So Kato is one of the few, and I want you guys to start thinking if you can think of any other sidekicks who eventually become better than their superhero counterparts. I don't think there are a lot out there, but I really do think that he's one of the very few.
Well, that brings me to my sidekick, the first one I choose, because what John from the Long Box Legion asked us to do this podcast, he asked if we thought there were any sidekicks who overcame their superheroes, and I think Kato's a great example. And my example is Kid Flash. He was created by John Broome and Carmine Infantino. Wally West first appeared in Flash number 110 in December of 1959. He was the nephew of Iris West, who was dating Barry Allen, the Silver Age Flash. Wally was getting a tour of Barry's lab when lightning struck the lab for a second time, immersing Wally in the exact same chemicals that made Barry the Flash. His original costume was the same as Barry's, but in 1963 it changed to the yellow and red motif. And then in 1985, during Crisis on Infinite Earths, Barry Allen sacrificed himself to destroy the Anti-Monitor's cannon and save the multiverse. And that's when Wally took over the mantle of the Flash in 1986. Wally was the Flash until 2009. So we have Barry for 29 years sacrificing himself, and then Wally took over for the next 23. He did what the sidekick's job is to do, take over the legacy of the hero, and no one has exemplified that more than Wally West. If you look at the personality that Barry has on the TV show, that is not the Barry Allen personality. That is Wally West's personality from the comics that Jeff Johns created, along with a number of other people who did excellent work on that second volume of The Flash. So that's who I would point to as one of the sidekicks who's gone over and above.
I got to say, he's probably one of the only ones who really takes over the mantle of, right, rather than being retconned. Like, he's an actual continuation of the person he assisted, and you very rarely find that because the comic industry just grips onto characters and never lets them die. And I think it's just, I mean, I love the heroism of Barry there and the allowance of that heroism to so that Wally takes over for so many years afterwards and they don't bring Barry back into the world, you know. It's interesting and impressive.
And also, nobody's as fast as Wally.
Wally is the fastest.
Yeah, there aren't a lot of superheroes whose sidekicks totally take over the mantle for a long extended period of time. Another example would be Altar Boy taking over with the Confessor. That's in the top 10 universe. Tommy, you immediately laughed at that. How come?
Because that was my second pick for a sidekick.
Altar
I was going to go
terrific.
With Altar Boy and the Confessor from Astro City. Volume 2 of Astro City, number 5, is when Altar Boy was introduced. And while he didn't overshadow the Confessor, I think he came close to being an equal to the Confessor in everything but the Confessor's powers.
That's right, because the Confessor
certainly
was
in
a
his
full
detective
on,
skill.
The Confessor was a full-on vampire, and the Altar Boy was not. But kind of a funny thing that was happening was a lot of people knew the Confessor was a vampire, so they tried to kill the Altar Boy in ways that you can only use on a vampire, which weren't all that effective on the Altar Boy. So they'd splash the Altar Boy with holy water, and the Altar Boy would feign pain, and, like, he had a little smoke packet, so, like, I'm burning. And then, you know, going for full attack. So I'm glad to have stepped on your thunder there, Tommy. The Confessor was a great one.
And if you guys haven't checked out Astro City, it was just nominated for this year's Eisner Award for Best Ongoing Series. Phenomenal book.
All right. Josh, I guess that brings us over to you.
My second one, I have to go with following sort of my theme. This is the more comedic version of Foggy Nelson for me, where the character actually has a different job in the comic book. And this is Arthur, the sidekick of the Tick. Now, rather than being the Tick's conscience in the book, Arthur is actually sort of a construct of the writer of the comic, where he's almost a narrator of reality. So where the Tick is sort of going off and speaking in constant ridiculousness, Arthur has to look at the world through how we would see it and portray the comic through those eyes. And I think the dichotomy between those two things, seeing the ridiculous villains and Arthur being very grounded while the Tick is off in his own strange and bizarre universe, just makes the whole comic super enjoyable to read.
That's a great example of a sidekick who has a very specific job. Everything in the world's going on around him, and Arthur's pointing at Chairface Chippendale going, he has a chair for a face. How does he breathe? Nobody knew. Tommy, I'm sorry I stepped on your last guy, but do you have someone else?
Yeah, my other one was going to be the Tick. And Arthur.
Well, you guys are just stomping all over LT tonight.
Well, you can go to hell then, LT. Well, I'll take mine is kind of a tie. Go ahead, LT.
So, I mean, we've kind of talked about how Captain America and the Falcon are equals, but in a way, the Falcon kind of took over for Captain America as a sidekick would. In
he's
some of these tropes.
I
know he's not really a sidekick, but...
Not a sidekick. Is that
some could
Bucky
say.
Was a sidekick. Bucky was a sidekick. Right? We can all say that. Bucky was a sidekick.
I'm just saying, just like Wally took over for Flash, Sam Wilson took over for Cap and kind of fulfilled that role. So he kind of fulfills some of the sidekick roles.
The debate cow says moot. I'm going to talk about two real quick ones because I think they're the same kind of thing, just in parallel universes. Snapper Carr and Rick Jones. Snapper Carr was the sidekick. Oh, I see Tommy looking mad. Snapper Carr was kind of the sidekick for the entire Justice League of America for a long time. And Rick Jones kind of had the same effect for the Avengers. Both were non-powered, non-super people. Both were often targeted by supervillains, and most of the time they were able to get out of scrapes on their own using their humanity or their wits to do so. Of course, there were some times when they did need to be saved. But Snapper Carr and Rick Jones were kind of humanizing both of these teams. Rick Jones, even before he was kind of the sidekick of the Avengers, of course, was the sidekick kind of the Hulk. He would go around with the Hulk and try to mitigate and manage the damage that the Hulk could do by keeping the Hulk calm or redirecting his anger and rage towards something else. So these two characters, Snapper Carr and Rick Jones, very much alike as they were sidekicks, not just for a superhero, but more for a superhero team. Does everyone kind of agree with that?
Snapper, I would say, was a little less involved in the superheroing than Rick Jones, because Rick Jones became a lot more physically involved in superheroing when he got the negabands and kind of became somewhat of a hero himself.
I know Snapper in his red costume was particularly tasty.
Red Snapper, very tasty!
They also served a similar function in that they made the comics that they were in suck.
That's a lot of opinion. I always kind of like Rick Jones.
Look, Rick Jones was the whore sidekick of the Marvel Universe. First he had the Hulk, then he was with the Avengers, then Captain America, then Captain Marvel. He was a tramp sidekick. He was just passing him around.
It was also a lot of fun to see him show up in the Jessica Jones detective comic book, as in, where is Rick Jones? That was kind of a fun run. I don't know if everyone read that, but it was good.
And the best thing about Snapper Carr was that the car he drove. He had a nice little well-drawn hot rod that he drove around in, and that was really the best thing about Snapper Carr.
Yeah. How's your Chevy doing, by the way?
Not so good.
All right, then. Mikey, who's next for you, my friend?
I'm going to go with Speedy, created by Mort Weisinger and George Papp. Roy Harper first appeared in More Fun Comics number 73 in 1941, the same time Green Arrow appeared. Eventually, he joined the Teen Titans and was the first boyfriend of Donna Troy. Fun Alec fact, Wally West had an unrequited love for Donna Troy during the same time period in the Teen Titans. Roy was one of the first sidekicks to actually challenge their mentor. In an amazing Green Lantern Green Arrow issues number 85 and 86, it's revealed that Roy's a heroin addict, and it's impossible to forget that Neil Adams cover. I think we can all agree on that. Years later, while working undercover for Checkmate, he met and fell in love with the assassin Cheshire and had a daughter with her, and he was one of the few competent single parents in comic books for quite a while, and he took great pride in taking care of his daughter. But when he ended up losing her, he fell off the wagon and went back to heroin and kind of reflected the whole fact that everybody, drug users addicts are always going to be addicts, and they have to constantly fight their addiction.
I just want to add that Lone Wolf and Cub is a much better example of a competent single parent. Go ahead.
Really? How many times did that little boy almost get killed?
How many people did that little boy also help kill? I think they even out. We should put that baby as a sidekick at some point, because that carriage, he used that carriage a lot. Josh, I know you've read a lot of Lone Wolf and Cub. What was the baby's kill count?
So we do have to come up with a body count there. At least the carriage count.
The carriage count at the very least. Josh, you got one more for us?
Well, thanks to the reemergence of the Flintstones, I'm going to say Barney. He's just another aspect of the ridiculously accurate socio-political landscape of the Flintstones comic book. And once again, it's something I just have to keep urging people to read, that if you haven't picked it up, you got to go do that.
Yeah, and you got to do it soon, because issue 12 is going to be coming out in another 3 months, and that's the end of the series.
Oh, really?
Get those.
Oh, really? Huh.
They're ending at issue 12, but I don't know why, but I think the writer is going to be writing a new Snagglepuss comic. So
you're just hoping he writes a new Snagglepuss comic.
I am.
LT, what do you got for your last one before we hit some honorable mentions?
I'm going to say Dumb Doug Duggan to Nick Fury.
No, but go ahead, but no.
Jughead to Archie?
No, argue your dumb Dugan.
Well, I mean, he appears as a tertiary character in a lot of the Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Comics, which Nick Fury was the main focus of.
He's no sidekick, my friend.
Look, Tom, you and Josh stole all of my stuff.
So you can't pull.
I am scrambling at straws.
If you're going to pull dumb Dugan out of your ass, you better stand up. He is no man's sidekick.
Just because you like his bowler hat does not make him less of a sidekick.
He's like part of an ensemble cast. Can we agree he's not a sidekick? He's part of an ensemble cast.
I agree.
Was Ralph the dog a sidekick? No. Maybe Fozzie was. But was Ralph the dog a sidekick? No. He's part of an ensemble cast. Just like the Howling Commandos. Yeah.
How many of the Howling Commandos can you name?
That's a great question. Very good looking question.
Don't look it up.
No, without looking it up on the internet, how many off the top of your head, cover your eyes, can you name?
Cover my. Why do I got to cover my eyes? I can see my hands. I'm not typing with my cock.
Yeah.
Dumb, dumb.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past you. I would put no doubt that you'd start out the question with, okay, Google.
Okay, Tom. Honestly, I can't name any others because Dugan was such a good character that he always made him. Oh, Jones. He was the African-American character. Gabby Jones. Gerald Jones. Jones was the African-American character. Uh-huh. He was the radio operator. Uh-huh. I can look this up afterwards, idiot. But Jones was definitely
one of
them.
And then there was the Asian character. Anybody else.
Oh, there was New York. He was the Asian character from New York. So that's three. I named three others.
I don't think any of those.
New York?
It was Jackie Johnson. Is that what you're talking about?
Jackie Johnson. Thank you. The African-American guy. I was close. I had the J's in there. For God's sake, give me something for alliteration.
I just think my point has been a little proved in that.
No, that your really point has not been proved.
Duggan was pretty much the leader of the Howling Commandos in Nick Fury's absence.
All right.
Wait,
just because
Jackie
I want to know.
Was in Sergeant Rock.
Oh, I love Sergeant Rock. That was great stuff. Just so we're all on the same page, how many people agree with Tom that Duggan was a sidekick? Anybody?
Let me just say before that, Mike just pulled a John Oliver on you and said, who here wants to think about Peru? Anybody? That's not Peru. You don't even know where Peru is on the map. He just pulled a Howling Commando Sergeant Rock switch on you. Awesome. Sorry. I don't agree that he's a sidekick. You might say the entire group might be a sidekick-ish thing, but not one of the characters alone.
I still say
you can't really name any of the other characters because they were all kind of more amorphous.
Just because he was the best of the
called out.
Just because he was the best of an ensemble cast doesn't mean he was a sidekick. That's a ridiculous argument.
Okay, the Howling Commandos.
And you're a ridiculous man. Fine.
Well, you know, two-fourths of us agree.
I was going to say half of us agree, Josh. Half of us agree because we're on the same side this time.
That's right.
Yeah, half agree and two-fourths disagree.
Two-fourths.
So that's more for disagreeing.
I'm kind of surprised you didn't say Dulé from Psych.
Oh. Was that a comic book? I do like Dulé Hilda.
Everyone likes Dulé Hill. I haven't seen him in anything where I haven't gone, he's delightful.
True.
Even on Celebrity Poker, he was a joy. And that's hard. All right, so I know we have some honorable mentions. I'm sorry, go ahead, Josh.
Oh, no, I was just going to hit you with my first or last honorable mention. Since I know Mike's got the extra big list, I was going to just throw mine out there just in case he happened to make it. I'm going with Aqualad. And the one who ends up in the new Teen Titans and the one that ended up on Young Justice. Like the power set, clearly on Young Justice he was an awesome character, and I'm glad they have reintroduced him into the Teen Titans Rebirth comic book line.
Well, for my honorable mention, I was just going to add Bucky Barnes in case that made Mike's big-ass list. Tommy, you got any honorable mentions?
No.
All right, then. Mikey, what do you got on your list, as long as your arm, of honorable mentions?
I have Etta Candy, created by William Moulton Marston and H.G. Peter. She first appeared in Sensation Comics back in 1942. Etta was the leader of the Beta Lambda sorority at the Holiday College. She serves as Wonder Woman's plump sidekick and plot MacGuffin and the living embodiment of hedonism. She's sassy, she's wisecracking, and she's not a bumbling comic relief like some other comic book characters in the Golden Age became. And she's going to be played by Lucy Davis in the upcoming film, and she seems delightful. Yes.
I'm just going to add, did you really have to add plump? That's just hurtful.
That was part of her whole thing. When Wonder Woman first encountered her, she was very thin, and she found candy and just started eating, and she was so happy with herself afterwards that she saw no reason to lose weight, even though Wonder Woman in the comic was constantly saying, maybe you'd feel better and, you know, be happier if you didn't weigh as much. And she was like, nope, I'm good. I've been thin. I've been plump. I like plump. Sassy. All right, well, that's what she was.
Sassy. She was actually a great character, and if you read the William Marsden autobiography, you can easily see some of the early influences when he was at college and also when his wife was at college. Very influential on that character of Etta Candy. Mike, what else you got?
Hit Girl. Go ahead, LT.
Well, since neither Tom or Josh mentioned this, which I thought they would because, well, it was one of mine, Devil Dinosaur from Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur.
Partner.
What, you don't think the dinosaur is a sidekick?
Partner. Anybody?
I haven't read enough to make an accurate assessment. I've never read the comic.
Partner. Sorry.
She's ordering that dinosaur around.
Have you guys read the comic?
We order you around. She's ordering that dinosaur around.
We order you around. You're not our sidekick. Mike, what do you got?
I've got Hit Girl, created by Mark Millar and John Romita Jr. We all know Mindy McCready because she was the best part of the Kick-Ass movie. She was trained by her father, Big Daddy, to be a costume/hero assassin. And she was just perfect in the movie. And I guess you could say in the first series, she was the sidekick for Big Daddy. And then the second series, Kick-Ass became her sidekick.
But much like Kato, she kind of used him as the, oh, look out, it's Kick-Ass. And then she killed everybody. Like, oh, good job, Kick-Ass. So she kind of Green Arrowed everybody with that guy. Green Hornet everybody with that one.
Green Hornet.
Some of my others on my list are Wong, Doctor Strange's sidekick.
I love Wong. Wong is one of my – I don't know how I miss Wong. Wong has got to be one of the best. And if you're reading the new series, really humanizes Wong and Wong's entire family who have all pledged to protect the Sorcerer Supreme. A lot of great backstory coming up. And I loved Wong teaching Spider-Man spider style when Spider-Man lost his spider sense. Do you guys remember that run? It was excellent. Spider-Man loses his spider sense, and he realizes that he's been using his spider sense as his fighting style. He doesn't really know how to fight. He's been using the spider sense to know how to duck. So Wong has to teach him a martial art, and they come up with spider style, and it is a great, great run. Sorry, Mike.
It's okay. I also had Woozy Winks, Plastic Man sidekick, on the list.
Very common one.
Oh, great comic one. He's a small-time crook and a partner of Plastic Man. He's modeled after two famous vaudevillians, Lou Costello and Hugh Herbert. But the best part about him was he couldn't be hurt, so they would constantly be getting him into physical situations where it looked like he would be killed, but he wouldn't be killed because of he had done something nice once for a gypsy, and she reverse-cursed him. So it was a good play on that. He was always funny. I also liked Stuff the Chinatown Kid, who was the sidekick for the Vigilante, one of the few Asian American sidekicks back in the 1940s and 50s who weren't depicted as a horrible mongoloid stereotype. If we're going to talk about sidekicks, probably the most popular sidekick for quite a while. He had over 120 issues of his own comic book. That would be Jimmy Olsen, Superman sidekick. And then I don't know if you'd consider this last one a sidekick or not, but I do. Jubilee. She was Wolverine's sidekick in the X-Men for a while. What do you guys think?
I think I've been trying to forget about Jubilee ever since I first saw Jubilee.
I don't say this nearly enough, but go fuck yourself, Tommy.
Wow, the vitriol. Wow. Somebody's a Jubilee.
I love Jubilee. How can you not like Jubilee?
It's pretty easy.
Just, Yeah, I mean, between her clothes and the,
it was the 90s. You were there.
I know, and I was kind of disappointed living through it. I didn't have to be reminded of it in comics.
We were all disappointed that you lived through the 90s, Tommy.
I'm also not a huge Jubilee fan. I guess, I don't know if I would consider the sidekick of Wolverine, I guess. I don't know. I guess you could probably make the claim that she was in enough issues where they were sort of teamed up and she was basically useless, so he had someone to dialogue with. But, God, I could have totally done without that in the Marvel Universe.
I always thought it was a cute dynamic.
Well, if it makes you feel better, LT and Josh, she lost her powers during M-Day when Scarlet Witch got rid of all the mutants.
Wait, she had powers?
About 198. Those Slurpees aren't going to drink themselves from Orange Julius.
I love Orange Julius.
Did her outfits also get shredded? Like, there was so much to hate about Jubilee.
She's still a member of the X-Men. She does have superpowers, but it's only because she's a vampire.
Are you messing with me?
I have no idea how much you made up.
I'm not John Olivering you on this one. Or am I?
I don't know.
See, even the readers don't. Even our listeners, the Longbox Legion right now are going, wait, is she a vampire or not?
Yeah.
There's only one way to find out. You need to stake her through her heart, cut off her head, and throw the entire body in a wood chipper, and then burn it.
The wood chipper? Those things are expensive.
That's how you kill an Albanian,
it's worth it to get rid of
idiot.
Jubilee. It is worth it to get rid of Jubilee.
I'm sorry I brought her up.
Yeah, that's a little harsh. I just, you know, could do with it. You know, maybe not. I'm fine.
If you listen. I would call her more of a, you know, I initially wanted to say she's more of a protege, but I guess a protege is a bit of a sidekick, so. Yeah, I'll go with sidekick. He was definitely mentoring her. We can all agree that he was mentoring her.
Yes.
Even if we don't like her, so.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, any others, Mike? I know you had a big list.
No, that was it. Everybody else covered the other folks I had on the list.
The only one else I wanted to say was Dino Mutt and Red Wing. We forgot some animal sidekicks in the thing. I always liked Dino Mutt.
Crypto.
Crypto? The Wonder Dog?
Crypto. Yeah. Well, you're going to tell me that he's not a sidekick?
He was a pet.
You son of a bitch.
He was. Was Streaky a sidekick? He was a horse. No, wait. No,
like
Streaky was a cat.
Didn't start out as a pet?
He was a robot, you idiot. Sentient. He talked.
Okay, you could go with Streak, the Wonder Dog from Green Lantern, who ended up taking over Green Lantern's comic because he was more popular.
That's a good point. All right, well, let's take a look at some of the other things we have to go before one of us murders LT. This is why we don't do this in the same place, because I would be just pummeling everyone to death right now. Mike, what's in the front of the long box?
In the front of the long box, I have Sidekick by J. Michael Straczynski. It is about a sidekick named Flyboy and him dealing with the repercussions of the Red Cowl, who passes away, and even though he was a billionaire playboy, leaves Flyboy nothing. All the money has disappeared from the accounts, and Flyboy tries to establish himself as a hero, and every time he does, he screws it up, and eventually it drives him insane, although he probably was sociopathic to begin with, and starts a rampage throughout the world. Very interesting comic of the deconstruction of the sidekick.
I have not read that one. A couple of people have mentioned that one to me in the past, so I will read that one soon. Tommy, what's at the back?
I didn't go back too far, but since May the 4th has just passed us, I figured I would choose a Star Wars title. So I chose Lando, by Charles Sewell and Alex Maleev. It is a story of Lando and Lobot. They decide to steal a ship in order to pay off a gambling debt, and things go wrong in a big bad way. And it is a fantastic tale of Lando and how Lobot became much more robotic than he used to be, and how Lando tends to talk his way out of everything. It was a great little tale, and gave a lot of backstory to the character of Lando from the Star Wars universe. I highly recommend it.
All those Star Wars comic books lately have really just been hitting it for me. The Darth Vader one, Vader Down, of course, was phenomenal. His sidekick, Dr. Arcturus?
Aphra.
Dr. Aphra. That's a great one, too. Where her,
comic now.
I know. Her dissertation is in tatters, and she has to redeem herself as a fighting anthropologist. It's insane. It's really funny. So all of those Star Wars ones have been really working well for me.
Tom, go ahead, Tommy. I think you will love Lando. He is very smarmy. He's very sweet-talking. He is all of that in this comic. And when you find out whose ship he steals, I think you will just love this book.
Does he steal Burt Reynolds' ship? Because that would be awesome. It would just be awesome.
No.
So my
no.
My little thanks for that second no. My little bit on social justice.
Sometimes we have to tell you no several times for you to understand, Tom.
Just because we've shared room at cons doesn't mean that's going to carry over. 17 no's and a yes means yes. For my little bit on social justice, I want to talk a little bit about Rick Vett's self-published book from King Hill Press, Brad Pack. Even though this was a self-published book, it got a lot of traction because it was a very, very interesting take on sidekicks. In it, four superheroes need four new sidekicks because all the sidekicks were killed. Midnight Mink is a Batman-type character who has a sidekick named Chippy. Midnight Mink is a very aggressive homosexual character, and it's very easy to see at the very beginning that he has sexual intentions on Chippy, which everyone else kind of makes fun of. Judge Jury is a fascist, white supremacist, steroid-using vigilante who gets a sidekick named Kid Vicious, and he tortures, he's a sadist who tortures Kid Vicious to make him stronger and forces him to take drugs to become super strong. Moon Mistress is a man-hating warrior woman who takes a sidekick named Luna, and she indoctrinates Luna into hating men and into a lesbian lifestyle. King Rad is an armored superhero who wants nothing but to do the ultimate adrenaline rushes. He's always seeking adventure. His sidekick, Wild Boy, and him take unnecessary risks to the point of nearly dying on several occasions for almost no reason. These were takes on what's the worst parts of some of the old sidekick tropes. King Rad having Wild Boy jump between buildings that he's not sure he can jump between just to see how far he can jump is one of those things where you can easily see it could have gone wrong for Batman and Robin. King Rad is pushing Wild Boy to be his best, but he's also looking for that adrenaline rush of, oh boy, what if Wild Boy dies this time? Judge Jury is, you know, kind of the Punisher character with a little bit of a white supremacist take on him. And Kid Vicious just kind of shows the sadistic, masochistic nature of some of these sidekick and superhero things. And the Midnight Mink was pretty much just everyone's exaggerated fear of what an aggressive homosexual predator would do if he had a sidekick. If Batman was, and he wasn't, of course, a predatorial homosexual, what it would be like if they took sidekicks. So all of these, this comic book is really just a diatribe about our worst fears of what could happen if superheroes existed and if they took sidekicks or children to take on the mantle after they go. and all of the, you know, little things that could happen and all the worst of. So it really examines the worst fears that we could have in the superhero universe and takes it to its most ridiculous extremes. But it does show some of the things that we're afraid of when we're talking about comic books, especially when children are involved in these comic books. Am I the only one who read this? Everyone's nodding their head.
Apparently
yes.
So. Yeah.
It's a really, really good comic book. And it really, you know, kind of takes the extremes of what these, you know, superheroes could become if let go in a universe where no one was stopping them.
I would love to borrow that comic book sometime, Tony.
I would love to loan it to you. But that's a tangent. And speaking of tangents...
Now, I had the thought to take us on this happy little tangent where we all picked the superhero whose sidekick we would want to be. But now that you've laced it with pedophilia and awfulness, I think I might have to pick something else.
What would you rather do besides pass a stone this week?
No, never mind. I'm going to stick with it. If you had to be a hero, sidekick, or villain, who are you going to be with?
Batroc, the leaper, sidekick, the parkour kid. At 50 years old, I'm sure I could pull it off. The parkour kid. We'd both be Algerian. Fuck you, Josh. And he would teach me to fight like a man in a world full of superheroes. Be the best you can be, mon ami.
I would choose Shazam because all of his sidekicks that he's had, he actually imbues with the same powers as him, and they are just as strong as him. So that way I wouldn't have to be worried about being killed while I was out on the adventure.
If you kill all the other sidekicks and then kill Shazam, is it like the movie One where you like gain the powers?
It's like Highlander. There can only be one. I'm just not going to tell the rest of the cousin Marvels about it until after I off them.
Yeah, I don't know why they're getting a little smaller.
For those listeners who have no idea what I'm talking about, we'll do a whole episode on the Marvel family, and you will be like, what?
Oh, I want Uncle Marvel so bad. That came out wrong.
Yeah, there's no right way for that to come out.
You're right. LT?
You know, I would have to say the Great Lakes Avengers would be who I would sidekick to because I already have a superpower. I can find parking. And that would fit in so great with the Great Lakes Avengers.
It's true. They got the Winnie. You got to park that thing somewhere.
Huh. I mean, it's like a perfect fit.
You could be the chauffeur lad.
Chauffeur.
I'm just saying. Chauffeur.
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of a tough one for me. I know this might make me a space dolphin, but I might have to say Lobo.
You would totally be a space dolphin, buddy.
Just space dolphin it up.
Speaking of the main man, did the main man write us this week, or did anyone write us this week, Tommy?
We do have a letter this week. And before we do that, we have a fun Alec fact. Fun Alec fact. Alec won Morning Glories, Volume 1. So, hey. Alec, send me your address. Send Lucky Bastard your address, and we'll mail that out to you.
Way to keep your secret identity, Lucky Bastard.
Anyway, this week, let us read the listener mail. I listened to the Martian Manhunter podcast, and I just wanted to say among the field of heroes with vulnerabilities like fire or kryptonite, who else has famous or exceptionally prominent vulnerabilities? My personal tangent is, what's everyone's favorite scotch? The V-Trout. So, to answer the V-Trout's question, I am really liking Spice Trees, Compass Box Spice Trees scotch right now is my favorite currently.
It's more of a whiskey, but it's a Scotch whiskey, so I got to go with Bushmills. They sent me a Christmas card this year. That's how much I drink.
It's an Irish whiskey. That's not a Scotch whiskey.
Can it be both?
Glenmorangie has a Scotch that's aged in port barrels, and I think that's probably currently my favorite.
Fair enough. And for other vulnerabilities, of course, Green Lantern's famous against yellow and earlier against wood. That's a pretty easy one. Batman and bullets. Pretty vulnerable there.
That's just his parents.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I forgot.
But too soon.
Too soon, Mikey.
Now, the yellow, that's not a vulnerability as much as it is a limitation.
Until somebody throws a yellow bat at you.
Drunk. How limiting is this, asshole? Bang, 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 bang. Well, the wood was definitely a vulnerability because the villagers used it to kill the original Green Lantern. It was changed to yellow later. It was wood first. Everyone looks confused. You don't remember the storyline?
I do remember this.
Not the first Green Lantern, I'm sorry. The very first Green Lantern was killed in ancient...
The power of the Green Lantern.
Yeah, the power of the Green Lantern. He was killed by the villagers who used wooden clubs to beat him to death, and he became like the lantern part of the Green Lantern, the power source. So that was definitely a vulnerability. You have to agree with me there, right, Josh?
I guess.
And Solomon... you know what?
You got your back, Tom.
Yeah. Thanks. I don't know. I'd paint a bully yellow and shoot him right in the face, but that's just me. I'm talking about Ryan Reynolds, by the way.
It was a good movie.
It was not a good movie.
Hey, you don't want to shoot Ryan Reynolds because then we get rid of Deadpool.
That's a good point.
Not Ryan Reynolds back.
Oh, that's right. He's fine.
He's fine.
He's fine.
It's like when people used to, hit the Three Stooges in the face with like a lit cigar. Like, what are you doing? Like, I've seen you do this a million times, man. Are you okay? You're like, no, I'm not okay. It's a movie. Three Stooges? Anybody? I am so old.
Do you think you not know who the Three Stooges are?
Oh, you just didn't think it was funny. Okay. It's fine.
Yeah, that's it.
Look, man, there's a comic book about them.
They did have a comic book.
They did have a comic book way back in the day, too.
Currently out there.
I mean, I hated
the one now.
I'm gonna do air quotes on the radio.
The artwork.
The Unbreakable, his vulnerability when they had to be water. I was like, you mean everyone's vulnerability? We all drown. That's not a vulnerability, right?
The void of space is Batman's vulnerability.
Yeah. Nuclear holocaust. That's my vulnerability. Nuclear holocausts.
And gas chambers.
Yeah. Shut it.
Back in the 60s, Iron Man's vulnerability was poor batteries.
And alcohol.
And bacon. He did have that heart condition.
He did have a heart condition.
You never see somebody trying to kill somebody, you know, like Tony Stark with just feeding him greasy food, though. That would be a way to try to really off him. That's the comic I'm going to write.
That's the comic I'm going to read.
The bacon.
Tony, we've made this lovely dinner for you. Every course has bacon in it.
As long as the recipe's in there, I'm down.
I'm in.
Well, how does one win a graphic novel from us, LT, and what is this month's giveaway?
This month, May, we are giving away Wanted by Mark Millar, J.G. Jones, and Paul Mount. And
much better than the movie.
I have not seen the movie, nor have I read the comic, but I hear it's very good. One would need to write into Lucky Bastard, letting us know what we're doing well, what we're not doing so well, what they'd like to see as a topic, etc. and so forth. And they will be entered into that month's raffle, and we will randomly pick a winner from that month's entries.
And it's not just Lucky Bastard. You should put Lucky Bastard
outside the long box.
Yeah.
We say it so much, I just assume that all of the Longbox Legion knows it by now.
Well, this you always got to anticipate this is someone's first episode. So, Tom, you should tell us, where can they reach us on Twitter?
On Twitter? Well, we're at the Long Box Guys on Twitter. That's Outside the Long Box, at the Long Box Guys on Twitter. This week we've had a little bit of fun once again talking about wrestling. We went off on a little bit of a tangent on that. But we also talked a little bit about sidekicks. And, yeah, we've been having – and oddly enough, the Divinals are not taking the bait and starting a Twitter war with us. But Kimi.com has taken the bait, and they are in a Twitter war with us at the moment, mostly because they give terrible, terrible, terrible service.
That's, who was that we're in a Twitter war with?
Kimi.com.
Kiwi?
Yeah, Kimi. They're supposed to make me a key for my car, and they sent me five different keys, key packets, and none of them have worked. They are truly terrible. Never use them.
Kimi.
Kimi.com. 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 That might not be right. I just know the company, not so much the website. It is key.me. yeah, if you put key.me, you'll find it. They're a terrible company. They're terrible people, and we wish them all the pain in the world.
Twitter war on.
Twitter war on.
You have crossed the wrong people.
You have made a very
technology and time on our tie-ins.
You have made a very weak and ineffective enemy this day, my friend. Said that to Bank of America also once.
You will get a poor Yelp review, I assure you, sir. Like, we don't serve food. I don't care. I'm still giving you a poor.
Tens of people can't be wrong.
Well, anyone else have anything to plug?
Yeah, you should also go check out our YouTube channel. It's just search on YouTube for the Long Box Guys, and you'll find our YouTube channel.
And also, I would like to plug IanLino.com.
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 IanLino.com, purveyor of fine t-shirts, stained glass prints, and other geeky things, including Johnny Skywalker rocks glasses. Scotch never tastes nicer than in a Johnny Skywalker scotch glass.
All right, we'd also like to thank Kirby Crackle for providing us our geek rock music. You can check him out at KirbyCrackleMusic.com. And I think I should also thank our other friends, our other podcasters, the NOLA Nerd Couple. If you're not listening to their podcast, what is wrong with you folks? Listen to the NOLA Nerd Couple, especially if you want to talk about Comic Cons. These guys go to more cons than I think the four of us put together.
That's probably true. They go to a lot of cons. And their Twitter feed is really interesting, too. So make sure you just search for NOLA Nerd Couple. Hard to miss. Josh, do you have a favorite comic book store you'd like to plug?
Yeah, you guys should check out Friendly Neighborhood Comics in Bellingham, Massachusetts. I got to tell you, that place is clean.
All right, everyone, have a great week. I'll see you all next week. What's our topic next week, boys?
Lackeys.
Lackeys.
All right, fine distinction. I can't wait to get into it. And from all the Long Box guys, have a great week. Love you.
But I think they're maybe racist. Just because I'm human, they don't want my help. It seems it doesn't really matter if your superpower's firing through the melt. I tried to join the Justice League, but Batman was a douche to me, and Black Canary wouldn't tell me hi. And Plastic Man just threw a middle finger that was 30 stories high. I got a message from the Great Lakes Avengers. They offered me a membership, but I did not accept it. They're a walking disaster. Like an owl with a fireball, they just don't make sense out through the West. Here's a long time. To call themselves Avengers is a crime. Marcel was Europe's favorite mime, so I guess I'll look around. I tried to join Green Lantern Corps, those Guardians were such a bore. They said no way, but I was a surprise. And that's okay, those uniforms are so tight that I fear they shape my thighs. I tried to join Fantastic Four, I didn't even reach the door. Who thought that Herbie's such a serious guy?
I guess I'll look around.
I pissed myself to the point where I thought I might not make it all the way through. Like,
I'm so glad I'm recording right now.
God damn it.